Your vote counts in this election. I'm sure you've heard that before. Usually, as election day nears, you're going to hear radio and television ads trying to convince you to get out and exercise your civic duty by casting your ballot for elected officials. You know, year after year, the percentages are quite low for our elections. Voter turnout hovers somewhere around 20% in years where no president is being elected. It might grow up to 40% when the chief executive is on the ballot. But isn't it amazing that in a land where we are given the opportunity to choose our leaders, less than half of the population usually casts a ballot? I'm sure there are many reasons why people don't vote, but I think one of the top ones would be they don't feel their vote counts anyway. What's one vote matter? Especially if you live in downstate Illinois. What difference does it make what we vote because Chicago so outnumbers us? It doesn't matter. So a lot of people just decide not to vote. But the election that I'm speaking of today is not being held in November, nor does the ballot have the names of local, state, and federal candidates on it. It's a different kind of election, one in which every vote really does matter, and the stakes are monumental. This is an election that will shape your life here on earth as well as your eternal destiny. It's not a democratic vote where the majority rules. Unlike the times when your vote doesn't seem to matter because you're outnumbered, you alone are casting this ballot. The choice is yours, and everything rides on your decision. With apologies to my Calvinist friends, the Bible clearly teaches that we have a choice and that it has eternal consequences. Before we get into the book of Proverbs, I want to share with you three verses from the Old Testament. And I want you to note the word that appears in all three of these passages. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, Moses is speaking to the people of Israel, and he says, "This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, that you and your children may live." A generation later, Joshua also addressed the people of Israel. The passage that was read for us earlier, verse 15 says, "But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose you this day whom you will serve. Whether it's the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." And then in Proverbs chapter 8, in verse 10, "Choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold." Did you catch this recurring theme? Choose. Choose life. Choose whom you will serve. Choose wisdom. In each text, there are two alternatives, and each person is called to make a choice between them. Maybe none of them are so direct as the first one, where Moses says, "I'm setting before you life and death. God's blessings or God's curses. Make a choice. Choose life that you can live." And not always do our political elections pit such stark alternatives against each other. But in this case, you couldn't have more opposite choices than life and death. And it's that kind of choice that we see in Proverbs chapter 7, 8, and 9. We're talking here once again about wisdom. And something that Solomon does, and I'd like to carry on with this imagery, he portrays wisdom and folly as women. calling out, trying to get people to follow them. And so I want to portray this as an election for your soul. Between these two candidates, and we will make a choice between one or the other. So with a bit of creative license, let's meet the candidates in this race. The first candidate I'm calling Wilma Wisdom. She ought to be a familiar face by now. We've been talking about her from the beginning of this series. She's calling out to anyone who would listen. Now, as I picture Wilma Wisdom in my mind, the word that comes to mind is proper. She dresses properly. She handles herself with dignity and grace. She would never act or speak inappropriately. Her campaign's theme song would be, "Do the Right Thing." Now, on the other side, we have Fanny Folly. Before you throw a book at me, understand that Solomon uses folly in Proverbs 9:13 as her name. If Wilma Wisdom brings up the idea of proper to our minds, folly, Fanny Folly brings to mind the word popular. Her manner, we will see, could be described as crude, rude, and socially unacceptable. But she's a big hit with the populace. She draws big crowds to her campaign rallies. The theme song for her campaign would be, "If it feels good, do it." Now, in our elections, each party comes up with a platform for their candidates to run on. This is what the campaign is all about. Not much attention is given anymore to the construction of these party platforms at the national conventions because that's boring. Doesn't get good ratings. We just want to see the familiar faces. But these planks become very important as the candidates go out and campaign for office. It's what they're running for. And in this election, the two candidates have very different campaigns. We see Wilma Wisdom's in Proverbs chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. "Does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights along the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates leading into the city, at the entrances, she cries aloud." I'm sure you've all seen videos of candidates where they're standing at the gate of a workplace, and as the employees walk in, they're shaking hands. Or they're out on the streets meeting the people. That's the picture we have here of wisdom. "To you, O men, I call out. I raise my voice to all mankind. You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain understanding. Listen, for I have worthy things to say. I open my lips to speak what is right. My mouth speaks what is true, for my lips detest wickedness. All the words of my mouth are just. None of them is crooked or perverse." That doesn't sound like a politician, does it? "To the discerning, all of them are right. They are faultless to those who have knowledge. Choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her." I would summarize Wilma Wisdom's campaign with the three R's. Not talking about reading, writing, and arithmetic here. The first plank in her platform is responsibility. Notice in verse 5, "You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain understanding." How many of you have seen that commercial for a university out east that does a lot of online learning? And the guy's up there, and he makes this statement. In our culture, everyone is given equal talent, but not everybody is given equal opportunity. How many of you have said garbage to that, to your television? I have. Not everybody is given equal talent. Give me a break. It doesn't work that way. But notice, wisdom says that's not an excuse. Just because you may not have the same talent as others around you, maybe you don't have the smarts that other people have, do something about it. Take responsibility and better yourself. Gain wisdom. Gain knowledge. Gain understanding. Don't expect things to be handed to you. Go out and get it. And that used to be the mentality of our culture. If you didn't have something, you worked for it. If you wanted something, you saved until you got it. You didn't sit around whine and complain until somebody gave it to you. And that's what wisdom says. If you don't have it, go get it. And especially when it comes to wisdom, God has said, if anyone lacks wisdom, ask me and I'll give it to you. It's there if we would take it. Responsibility. Look back to chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. My son, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Keep my commands and you will live. Guard my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your kinsman. Again, take the responsibility. Listen. Take to heart what you have heard. Make it a part of your life. A second emphasis for wisdom is respectability. Back in chapter 8 and verse 12, I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. And two verses later, verse 14, counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have understanding and power. And then over in chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maids and she calls for the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come in here. She says to those who lack judgment, come, eat my food and drink the wine that I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the ways of understanding. She does everything in a proper, respectable manner, which, as we're going to see in a moment, is quite the opposite of her opponent. There's no shortcuts. There's no shadiness with wisdom. Everything she says and does is above board, honorable, and respectable. And then the third aspect of wisdom's campaign is righteousness. In chapter 8 and verse 20, I walk in the way of righteousness along the paths of justice. In chapter 9, verse 10, we read some familiar words. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. That phrase, fear of the Lord, you see a lot in the book of Proverbs. And we have pointed out that it means to take God seriously, to have a healthy respect and awe of God for who He is. And notice it says here that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But it also means something else. Go back a chapter in Proverbs 8 and verse 13. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. See, when we take God seriously, when we understand that God is holy, we develop His attitude towards sin. And I know we're all brought up to say, hate's not a nice word. Don't use the word hate. You know, God uses the word hate. There's a lot of things that God hates. God hates sin. He hates what sin does. It completely ruined His creation. It cost His Son His life. He hates sin. And so should we. There's something to be said for a holy hatred like God has. Wisdom says, in essence, if you vote for me, I'm going to clean house. I don't know about you, but a lot of our lives could use a good house cleaning, couldn't they? So Wilma Wisdom's campaign runs on the principles of responsibility, respectability, and righteousness. Now, Fannie Folly also has a campaign, and they also have three R's, but that's where the similarities end. Her first emphasis is on revelry. To her, every day is a party. Proverbs 7:9 shows, At twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in, that's when she makes her move. She's all about the nightlife. She's all about partying. You ever notice how many nightclubs and party venues and places like that are kept in the dark? Ever wonder why? Maybe it's so people can't see what's going on there. But you know God sees. He sees all. Even the darkness is light before Him. Paul uses the imagery of darkness in Ephesians 5, 11 and 12. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them, for it is shameful to even mention what the disobedient do in secret. Now it's not done in secret. It's out there for everybody to see. They're flaunting it. You can't get away from it. And it seems like the darkness is growing more and more dark. It's overtaking our culture. And the advocates say, live it up. You only go around once, so grab all the gusto you can. Life is a party. The second principle of folly is recklessness. In chapter 7, verse 10, describes Fanny Folly to a T. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. She took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face. That's what Fanny Folly is all about. Not dignified, not respectable in any sense of the word. More reckless. She wants what she wants, and she goes after it. Turn over to chapter 9, verse 13, continues this description. The woman Folly is loud. She's undisciplined and without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way, let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. Recklessness, revelry, she's all about it. Now, she sounds a little similar to Wilma Wisdom, where she says, let all who are simple come in here. But she has a whole different thing in mind when they do. She has a whole different agenda for them. Whereas Wisdom has worked hard to establish her home, cook her food, and set her table with integrity, Folly brags about stolen water and food eaten in secrets. Nowadays, Folly says, go ahead, take the drugs, drink up the booze, have carefree sex with whoever you feel like at the moment. You go only go around once. Live it up. And that's a very popular campaign in our world today. Turn on most of your TV channels and you'll see it. Not just in the shows, in the commercials. We're getting flooded with this campaign all around us. Party hard, drive fast, live free. And don't stop for a moment to think of where it might take you. The third plank in Folly's platform is rebellion. Back in chapter 7, beginning in verse 13, she took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face she said, I have fellowship offerings at home. Today I fulfilled my vows. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and have found you. I have covered my bed with the colored linens from Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband's not at home. He's gone out for a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and won't be home till full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. You see, Fanny Folly knows full well what she's doing is wrong. But she's doing it anyway. And she's enticing others to do it. Come on. Come along. Join me. Don't bother me with some outdated morality. We're grown-ups now. It's okay. You know, Paul described this society all too well in the beginning of Romans. Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 28. He had talked about the spiral of sin's depravity, how it snowballs ever since the Garden of Eden. And in verse 28, he says, "Furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They're senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Although they know God's righteous decree, and that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of them who practice them." What is that saying? Not only are they going to do what they want, but they're going to applaud everybody who goes along with them. And that's a mighty pull. You know, we talk about peer pressure with our youth. You know, that doesn't end when you graduate high school. That follows us throughout our lives, on the workplace, wherever we might be, when we're around friends. There's that pull to be like everybody else. And that popular opinion is very persuasive to many. And so we see Fannie Folly's campaign based on revelry, recklessness, and rebellion. You could say she puts the party in political party. Now, every political campaign has promises, most of which are soon forgotten as soon as the victorious candidate takes office. I mean, by then they're already running for re-election, so they got to make new promises, right? But in this election, there are promises that each candidate makes, and they will certainly come true. These are the consequences of the choice that's made in this election. Wilma Wisdom promises a life marked by three things: discipline, discernment, and destiny. Discipline, discernment, and destiny. Proverbs 9, verses 7 through 9, speaks of discipline. "Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Instruct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning." See, that's discipline. We're always learning. We never get to the point where we know it all. We're always increasing in our knowledge. And it's not just our knowledge, it's how we live. And even those who follow wisdom, we're not perfect. We still at times stumble and fall, but we learn from it. And we get up and we continue to go on the right path. That's the discipline that wisdom brings. Wisdom also offers discernment that will keep us from making terrible mistakes. And Proverbs 7:5 says, "The words of wisdom will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words." Now, it's true, we all learn some lessons the hard way. We have, probably continue to. But if we're truly wise, we're going to gain discernment that will keep us out of those situations to begin with. And we can avoid a lot of painful lessons that we learn by experience by making good choices from the beginning. That discernment is something that wisdom offers. And then thirdly, wisdom promises a delightful destiny for those who choose her. In Proverbs 8:35, "Whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord." Proverbs 9:11 adds, "For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life." Now, we've said this doesn't guarantee necessarily a long life on earth. We can all think of godly people whose lives were cut short. We're speaking here in generalities. And those who make good decisions generally will have a longer life, rather than those who are reckless with where they go and even how they keep their bodies. So that destiny is promised. And even if we do not have long years on this life, we have an eternity with God that we will spend with Him when we follow the way of wisdom. Vanity folly, on the other hand, can only promise depravity, delusion, and death. That passage in Romans 1 I read earlier is a definition of depravity. It shows what sin is all about. Jesus said in John 8:34, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. We see that today in the addictions that are rampant. And it's not just one or two things people are addicted to. There's a whole list of things that keep us bound, that keep us enslaved, unless the power of God breaks that chain of addiction. And you notice how it begins. It always starts off slowly. And then it builds. You know, what we start with loses its excitement, so we need to have something a little stronger, a little bit more powerful. Then when we get used to that, we got to grab something else. And it goes and goes and goes until finally we're hooked. And we can't get out on our own. Folly also leads to the delusion. We think that we are in control of ourselves. We think we've got it all together, when in reality we don't. We become as those described in 2 Thessalonians 2:11, who are under a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie. What's the lie? That you can be your own God. The same lie from the beginning that the serpent said to Eve. You can make up your own rules. You can do what you want. You can be the master of your ship. It's a delusion. But many people buy into it. And then finally, the path of folly leads to death. Proverbs 7, verses 26 and 27 says, many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. I don't know, maybe we ought to change Fanny's campaign song to AC/DC's Hit Highway to Hell. That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? And that's exactly where it heads. That's where the people who follow her end up. And that brings us to the choice. The choice each of us must make. And we will make a choice. Even not making a choice is making a choice. You're already in Fanny Folly's camp by nature. It's only as we choose to follow wisdom that we leave it. Making no choice means we stay right there and share her fate. We can't abstain from casting a ballot. We must choose. So I go back to those opening verses. From the words of Moses, choose life that you and your children may live. From the words of Joshua, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. The choice is yours. Now, I imagine that if this were a democratic election held in our country today, it'd be a landslide for Fanny Folly. Jesus said that many would take the broad road toward death. Only a few take the narrow road to life. And as we look around us in the world, the vast majority of people we know are casting their vote for her, buying into her campaign promises of fun and freedom, even though we know where they're going to end up. And that's what makes the pull of the world so strong. If we want to follow after wisdom, we're going to be going against the vast majority of people we know, people we love, people that mean something to us. They're not going to understand why we live the way we live. The sheer numbers stack up against those who cast their vote for Wilma Wisdom. The difference in this election, though, is that every vote indeed counts. This is not one where the majority rules, and so therefore, if you don't cast your vote for the majority, it doesn't matter. Because there's only one vote in this election, and that's yours. And the way you cast that vote is going to determine your destiny, your life here on earth, and where you spend eternity. Remember, your vote counts in this election. Whichever candidate you choose will either run or ruin your life.